Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. S2 is the official cognitive evaluation in sports, from youth to pro, where athletes and coaches build to win.
We are delighted to have longtime friend and coach Omar Mance on the S2 Cognition Podcast today. His background includes 21 years of coaching at the collegiate and professional level. His most recent stint was with the Milwaukee Bucks G League affiliate, Wisconsin Herd, where he served as a player development assistant coach. And today we're going to cover the importance of data and analytics in basketball coaching. He's going to emphasize the complexity of decision-making at the highest level of the game and how data can help identify players with the capacity to excel in certain situations. Mance also highlights the role of coaching in helping players improve their decision-making skills and overcome some inconsistencies they might have. The conversation touches on the need for on-court training and the importance of understanding the speed and dynamics of the game. For those that are new here, welcome. We're excited to have you today, and those that are returning listeners, we always appreciate your support. To help us continue our growth, we ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the show. Thanks again to Coach Mance for taking time to join us today. It's a busy schedule for coaches. We hope you guys enjoy. All right, Coach, thanks for joining us, man. You've been around the game of basketball now, what is it, almost 21 years, maybe 21 years of college and professional coaching. Where are you seeing that the game is headed?
Yeah, I'm excited to be on here and just thinking about what you guys bring to the table and what you guys do. The game is headed to not only analytics, but also how can we coach, teach, and develop better and get all the data that's needed to it. You know, I think before is the eye test. You know, this guy's got some kind of talent, some kind of potential, and you kind of go off field and you do some research, you watch the film, but now it is how much information can I get on my individual players to help them grow and reach their potential. But the game is headed, you know, from analytics, but also just getting more data, getting more pieces to the puzzle. So the game's headed in a direction where we want more information so we can serve better, coach better, develop better, and players can play better.
It's all three facets, right? It's how do we coach better? How do we pick better players that make better decisions? And then how do we develop them more efficiently? And I know that's a lot of what we're going to get into today. I do want to talk about, let's just come out right out of the gates talking about all I see in the game of basketball now. And it was fun watching the Olympics and seeing all the different sets and plays that they're running. The high pick and roll is still king. That is still how we're going to create space and create openings. So I just want you and Scott to kind of dialogue through the decision-making tree, right? When we see that a point guard makes a good decision, it's not that simple. It's extremely complicated, but we boil it down to, that was a good read. That was a good decision. When in reality, it could have been a great read, poor execution. It could have been a poor read, but man, I don't know how he did it, but he did it. Can we walk through the point guard's elements of his decision-making in the high pick and roll? Take this any direction you want to go.
Yeah. You know, the part of distinctive, you know, making decisions, you know, learning at a high level, making instinctive decisions, and doing it quick and in real time is very difficult, right? I think I mentioned before this summer, we talked a little bit about how do you make really complex things very simple. And some of that coaching you work through, but a lot of it is understanding the awareness of your players to say, okay, they can make complex decisions, but the other factors really play into it. So distraction, just spatial awareness, like knowing where they are on the court. So for me, if I can identify that in a player earlier, right, it helps me know who can be put in these situations, number one. Number two, it also helps me for the guys that don't make those decisions well. How can I put them in situations in practice, in skill development, in the off time, especially in the G League? You know, it's about developing. So I need to be able to rep out these things that are very complex, that are instinctive. But you have to make the right read. You have to make the right decision. So how can I do that without the data of knowing where this player is, where he needs to be, and helping him get there? That's the part for me that was just a light bulb of, okay, we need drills. We need different things to put him in a situation to make these decisions. But I need to know where I'm starting and where I'm going because this player is struggling in this area. He can't make the read. I'm frustrated. He's frustrated. Our coach is frustrated. And now I have more data about where he is on that ability, and I can put him in situations. So for me, it's how can I put him in those situations to rep it, to get to a place where they can make these complex decisions, like a high pick and roll. How do I make that read? It's a simple thing that everybody does, but there's a reason why there's the elites and then those that struggle at all times.
The game is so fast, and the average viewer does not appreciate the complexity and the speed with which you have to make decisions. You know, it's one thing to be able to sit in a huddle on the sideline with a board, or maybe outside of the game in practice and have a dry erase board up there and kind of drawing out what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, you know, lining up and scripting out the rules. But when you step on the court, knowledge does not carry the day. You have to engage very different systems in your brain to operate at game speed. I mean, it is split second, and you've probably coached athletes who could tell you all the rules, all the things they're supposed to do, but once they step on the court and things start happening at the speeds they happen, it's a little chaos. It's over what you can overwhelm their systems very quickly.
Yeah, and you just touched on a couple of really good points. One, there's a lot of players, they can tell you what they need to do, they can give you the right answer. But as soon as you put in impulse, as soon as you make complex reads or even distraction, right, they're done. And that part to me is the key of the data, right? The data really helped me as a coach say, okay, I know this guy has all the right answers when the test is in front of me. What he doesn't have is the ability to have the right answers in live play when everything's on the line, when it's loud, when it's not drawn up on a board, we don't have a timeout left. He has to go make the read, and there's instinctive learning, be able to make decisions off instinct, but also make the right reads. But this other guy, he is off the charts in making the right reads. He knows how to do it. He's just not as talented. He's just not as skilled, yeah. You know, right? So now I have to put myself in a situation and say, do I play this other guy or can I get this information earlier so I can help build up that player who's going to struggle when it comes to it?
Yeah, you're right. And I think one of the things you said was, you know, you probably don't have to coach very long to appreciate that there are differences in the way athletes process information. And every athlete processes. We once in a while get asked, hey, is this a processor or not? And, you know, we kind of shake our head a little bit and say, everyone processes. It's how they process. And, you know, a seasoned coach has this tacit knowledge and experience that over time you'll be able to figure out and make an educated guess about the source potentially of the mistakes that they're making. But sometimes it may feel like you're just guessing because you can have the same mistake being made, but for very different decision-making reasons, for different weaknesses in how they process information. And so I love that. Yeah, that was our main objective, was to help coaches and athletes understand how you're uniquely wired in seeing and processing the game so you had a fighting chance to work on the things you needed to work on, to come up with some quick fixes. Those individual differences hopefully took a little bit of the head banging on the wall out of the equation for you as a coach. Was that your experience?
Yeah, no, it was a game changer because I wanted more data. We all want to develop. We want to be great. How do I get this player to reach his potential? We talk about maximizing potential, optimizing everything we can out of the player. So if I want to be great, if I want to help our player be great, I want them to maximize their potential. I have to know how they learn. I have to know how they make decisions. I have to know the areas they excel in to put them in those, but the areas that they're weak. And so the data for me, it just blew my mind because, again, I've said this about being in the G League and being around pros. I went from a high school diploma to a doctorate at the complexities of what's needed behind the scenes and what S2 presents is that. It's a complex of thought process of a player that he can make instinctive decisions. You got the mind, the body, and the spirit, right? We always talk about that. You know, you got the mental approach, you got the physical approach, but this is not that, right? This is a cognitive learning, instinctive play. So once I got the data as a head coach, I knew how I could coach my players better. That was the biggest key. I knew this guy was, I was so frustrated with him in drills because he wouldn't get it. And I said, come look on the board.
I was going to ask you. Yeah. I remember there was that ball handle, that point guard that had load decision complexity. And you were like, look, if he closes here, if he's in drop, you do pass to the wing on the short. Like there were all these rules that you had him to filter through. And then when we talked through his report, you were like, oh, so the reality is he's got to do this read or this read. And then that's going to free him up to make the right read. And then you're like, there, that's it. That there it is right there. Let's simplify. And then in practice, let's drill all of those rules to see how he's filtering through those reads. I remember it clear as day.
Oh, and I think as the coaches at the professional level, the college level, this is high stakes, right? We want to get the most out of our players in. There's no excuses. And so we want this young man to get it. And the last point guard we had who was an All-American, he got it, right? Or this point guard got it. Well, it doesn't work that way, right? Everybody processes information differently. And so that, you know, Harrison, you brought a point. The data I got on that kid, I literally, it was an aha moment of I've been speaking a different language to him because he doesn't process it that way. I need to speak this language where we can go on the court, show it to him, and he does it. And he picked it up like, I mean, he went from, I don't think he can play to one of the better players we have. He's got a professional career right now. And I just think from A to B where he went, and part of it was getting data. So us as coaches, we want as much data as possible to not only give an edge, but how can we coach better? How can be excellent? And the data was so good because now I could see each player. Well, this is why he struggled with decision-making. This is why he struggled with how I presented the information. Mm-hmm. But these five other players, they got it. I mean, they picked it up and they were rolling. And so I wasn't as frustrated with the one player, which as coaches we do. We get frustrated. He can't pick it up. These other guys got it.
Or like,
and now I know why.
Even he doesn't want to. Right. And it's not even like, oh, it's not that he doesn't want to. It's just it's square peg, round hole. I think sometimes it does come off that way of like, oh, he's not interested. Well, it may be too easy for him. He may just be. I mean, not everybody's Luka Doncic, but you know, my point is that it might be too easy for him. And so I know that sometimes can be our takeaway when we see that in practice is like, oh, he just doesn't want to, this isn't for him. He don't want to be here. It's like, well, it might not be the case.
Yeah. And our guys got excited about it. I just think players want to be great. You know, this is college. As a college head coach, these guys were excited. As pros want all the data. How can I be great? What's the area that's holding me back? Because they're one contract away from, you know, a millionaire, right? And high-level college, SEC on beyond. These guys want to be great. They don't want it from the sports performance to the athletic trainer to the offensive coordinator, defense. Like, we want to be elite. So we want to get maximize this talent. So the more data I can get to be great, the players want to know, why can't I pick it up? I know what you're saying. So tell me, coach. That was the exciting part. They were excited that we were willing to, as a coaching staff, say, I want to coach you better. I want to get the most out of you. Here's the areas you excel in. Let's put you in more of those situations. And look, here's the areas that you struggle. Spatial awareness or just processing information. You know, just things that to us on this call are pretty normal.
Right.
To a kid, it's like, decision complexity. Right. I can make decisions that are complex. Right. No. Let me layer this drill and show you how difficult it is.
Coach, I got a question. So you now you have this insight about your players. How did it, you know, we don't come in and tell you how to coach. We don't come in and tell you these are the only drills you can do. In fact, our attitude is we'll give you the concepts. We give you the reasons, the why underlying the kinds of mental mistakes that are you're seeing in this player, and then some concepts for how to structure your drills. Was that enough? And how did it start to unlock the way you were thinking about drills and your creativity? Because that's the badge of honor we love, is that if we can help a coach just kind of think more creatively and approach things. Those are the best relationships we have when a coach is just wearing us out with creative ideas and concepts. Did you have a similar experience? How did you start thinking about decision making and structure your drills and tweaks to your drills?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, again, you realize you aren't as good as a coach as you thought, because you're like, I didn't even think about this complexity of this drill. You know, there's some great coaches I've coached with, mentors of mine, who are the best. And they're always like, give me a good drill. You know, tell me something you learned. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you were on the road, you saw this great drill. Or, you know, the coaches, even, you know, through the Bucks organization and the NBA, they're like phenomenal. And you just think there has to be something behind the layers of the drill. And I just think the data, S2, you guys provided another layer. So it's not the total answer to everything. Right. It complements what you do. That was the part that was really exciting, is it complemented. I want a drill that's going to really help our guys not turn the ball over. Okay, right? So I need a drill that's really going to help our big man catch on the roll and make a tough decision. So I'm already thinking, how can I, you know, eliminate some mistakes? So this allowed me to put individual players in situations. So we may be doing a drill and these two big men are going to do it this way because they process really well, and I want them to make decisions. These other two bigs, they're just going to catch it. I'm going to keep it simpler for them. So they were frustrated before, right, through the drills, because they couldn't process like the other two bigs, and they were thinking, man, we're behind them, we're not as good. No, they process differently. So now I can put some layers on top of the drills that I present. You know, the other part, you know, my dad was a legendary high school coach in Atlanta. And I just remember him always saying, you got to do late game situations. You know, high school coach in Atlanta, Lafonia High School, he's late game situations 20, 30 years ago. And I just remember, even as a head coach, one of the guys on our team wasn't going to play, young freshman, but his decision making, his awareness was off the charts in his report. It took him forever to finish it. I don't know if you remember that, Harrison, as a guy, it took forever. I mean, he could not finish in time, but he was, I mean, he was accurate as all get out. I remember even making a drill about a guy who I may put in at the end of the game. So late game scenarios, this is the lineup that actually, based on some of the data, they process information instinctively in real time with distractions, and they're accurate. May not be my best player, may not be a rotational guy, but late game, I said, you know, let me play with this a little bit in practice in some of our drills. So, because we're always looking for who can throw the ball in the end of the game. Who's do I want in there to take
who
that time
make
out?
The right pass, right.
Right pass, right decision, right read in the heat of the moment when it's not predictable. Right. And I'll finish the story quick, because one of our first games was a 2-point game. It's a free throw. And I'm like, put him in. I put in the kid who processed. Now, it went all because of the processing, but that went into the play, right? I mean, as coaches, you know, we don't want to say we got all the answers right from the data, but it just added this added layer. Like, I'm going to put this kid in. And I knew it took a long time for him to process information. So we did it after a timeout and on a free throw. So he comes in, he's looking at everything. If we make a free throw, we need, don't foul. Let's try to get a steal. We need a 3-pointer to win, a 2 to tie. He gets in there. You wouldn't believe this, Harrison. Scott, they threw the ball in. He got the steal. He didn't foul. Our best player wanted to foul. We're like, don't foul. He didn't foul. He manned the ship. He got the steal. He threw it to a 3-point shooter. They hit a three. We take the lead. And I just remember looking at our staff.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, we would never have put that kid, freshman kid in the game. But it's just a real-time example of how you rep it. You make drills, you think about decision-making, you think about guys who thrive, guys who struggle. You get them to a place where they get better. But also as a coach, you have confidence in guys who may not have performed. They're not getting, you know, in practice as well. But you know, based on the data, this is something they really do well. If that's
Awesome story. You know, Omar, we have so many examples. We've been doing this long enough and interacting with coaches across sports. Our favorite examples, we have so many, again, across sports, coaches saying, look, we had a kid on our team who was an incredible performer in terms of their cognition. I mean, just stunning. But they physically were just kind of, you know, modest in their talent, athletic, their technique, you know. But they are always we started paying attention, always in the right place at the right time. And so many stories about giving the lesser athlete, if you will. I mean, they're all great athletes, but the lesser talent physically, opportunities and earning starting positions. We've heard stories of soccer player, baseball players bumping them in, making the team, given a chance, and now they're playing in Major League Soccer or they're playing in pro ball now. We love those stories of kind of the underdog physical talent that just gets it done on the court because they're just thinking a tick faster or ahead of everyone else.
It's not only part of your roster management, part of the development piece, which we talk about coaches want to develop that freshman or that young guy, but it's also part of roster construction, right? It's who do I recruit? You got transfer portal, you got free agents, you got, you know, trades, like knowing that there's someone who's not off the charts in maybe these other areas physically, but there's some things that he cognitive can process. You're going to want to bring him in because he's going to pick up the offense. He's going to understand the offense. He's going to be able to do it. And for what you need, he may bring more to the table than someone who physically is off the charts. Now, it could be flipped, right? Depending on what you need, but just understanding what you said is important. Like every coach wants the analytics, wants the data, wants to know how, why are the Miami Heat signing these types of players? Or why does Boston signing some of these types of players that fit into their system? Well, there's something behind that layer. There's something behind the numbers. There's something that's a little bit different that you can plug them in any situation. Mm-hmm. They can process it. They can adapt. They can adjust. They can build out their awareness. They can process information in a way where they understand there's instinctive learning. Like they can learn on the fly. Like, all right, tell me what I need to do. Let's do it. And that is so much more beneficial at times, right? Yeah. Than just having a guy that can go out there and hoop. And every coach is trying to get that.
Well, when you have both, you got a special talent, right? We can name a few guys at the top level that have both.
That's what we've spent a lot of time here. The guards always get the love. You talked about a short roller earlier. Let's talk about some of the bigs and some short roll in action, right? So they have to make the decision on the catch, right? So the guard makes the read. Let's say he dumps it off. Big guy catches the pass. Now he's got a decision to make, right? Based on what the defense and how they move, they could do a bunch of different things. They could pass to the wing based on shifts of defender for an open three. They can take it to the rack and then a late pass for another cutter, or they could just take it to the basket, try to create foul or get the bucket. Those are the layered decisions of if I catch a ball in the pick and roll, if I do this and he does this, I do this. If the guy's in drop coverage, this is my read. That is decision complexity for a big in that same environment that decision complexity is for the guard to make a very similar read. What other processes go into a big that's going to have to make, right? Because, I mean, you know this as a coach. You have bigs who you can have out of the short roll and make a decision, and you've got bigs out of that short roll. You're like, just either get to the rack or just give it up quick. Yeah. Like, we can't have you – you know, manipulating or holding the ball. And so walk me through that as a coach.
Yeah, I think part of it, you just said, you layer the ball screen coverage with the guard. So the guard is coming off, he's got to make a decision. If the help comes, then he's got to throw it to the shake, or they call it the field guy for the three. If the help doesn't come, he's got to hit the big on the roll or the short roll. If the help, no one stops you, you got to keep going, right? So as you build up with the guard, you need to also build it up with the big. So the big is actually the key in that drill. If you're using that drill as an example, what do you do? If there's no help, then you need to short roll and you need to be ready to catch it. But for you, because of your processing information and how you can't really process at a rate quick with distraction at a high level, but you are really good when you have less decisions, you just catch it and you can go. That is where your wheelhouse, then you're telling that big, hey, you're rolling straight to the rim, regardless of how the defense is, because that read for you is elite.
Yes.
The read for the short roll guy who can process whether to help or not help can catch it, and he can make four different decisions. So what you would do is rep those with the big of making a similar decision on the other end of that pick and roll. And it's very complex. But they can do it because you understand based on their spatial awareness, based on their decision complexity, instinctive learning. You have data to push them in a way. We talk about Draymond Green. We need a Draymond Green. Everybody can't be
have a story for you. I have a thought process of how every player has a podcast now, but that's neither here nor there. As I say it on our own podcast, I get the irony. But listen to me here. There's Draymond Green did have a really cool piece of how complicated that Warriors offense can get at times. If this guy does this, I do this. And because they play together, you see it with Steph and well, formerly with Clay and with Draymond. They have this quote unquote connection. I truly believe, and we have not tested those players, but I believe their decision complexity is off the charts because they all understand if I do this and the defenders is this is how I create space. If he moves here, this is how I manipulate. If he does this, this is how I attack. And they're always in sync. And I get it. They've played together. And Scott, you can get into how playing together really does layer this cohesion with players over time. But it was so funny. He kept using the phrase that we always use. If he does this, I do this. Okay. If he now does, that's literally defined in decision complexity. So it is interesting, right? That you say everyone wants to find Draymond Green. They're not walking around here like leaves on trees. There's only so many of those players that can do that as well as he can. And also he's got a bunch of other things, right? Grit, determination, hustle, attitude, right? He could do it. So anyways, I don't mean to go on this tangent, but it is fascinating to hear these guys talk about their own offense and how complicated it truly is.
Yeah, it at that level, and again, I feel like I went to a doctorate, right? Just understanding the complexities, you know, having to work with the best of the best, you know, Giannis and these guys, their ability to make decisions in real time with everything that's going on around them and make the right decision at the highest level and be physical, yeah. You know, just freaks of nature, right? It just shows the data of I have talent, but what's behind that, right? Like, it's not even about finding Draymond or if everyone can shoot like Steph, right? It's who has the capacity, and this is what the data really was helpful for me, who has the capacity? Like, based on getting the data, I was able to understand these three guys can really be a Draymond type of a player. And so I want to put them in that situation. The other piece, as you're identifying talent, identifying your roster, of identifying guys that do well in these situations like you mentioned, is if the guys that don't do well, this goes back to your question, Scott, as a coach, I want to know how can I help them get better? I want to know. I know he can't process that way. I know I can put him in other situations to just roll, right? Roll at the rim and finish. But are there drills? Are there film? Is there different things I can do based on the data to help him get from A to B? That's the development piece. That's why this for me was a game changer, getting the data from S2, because I was able to coach players better in their weaknesses for complex decision-making. When they weren't very great at complex decision-making, they got better at it and they understood that weakness versus just being frustrated that they can't make the right read. Right. So that part was really good. Yeah. They knew like, okay, here's the areas of growth. Here's the areas that I do well. Hey coach, these drills are specific. Even if it's after practice, you guys are going to do these drills 10 minutes a day because it's going to help you with those decision-making when the game is on the line, you know, and we can talk about it a little bit later, even having alignment in your organization with the strength coach, athletic trainer, sports performance, like sports psychologist, like, hey, these are areas he needs to grow in. So he doesn't do well with distraction. So in practice, we're going to make sure he's not distracted. Like, how do we focus him? But we need to put him in situations where he's distracted.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe in the weight room, turn the music up, have five teams in there. Right. Yeah. Just get them all jammed up. You know, the alignment that the data brought across the board for our program and organizations was also something that was just really helpful.
You know, you've mentioned a couple of things that are so important for coaches to understand. There's no off-court training, or there's very little off-court training that's going to transfer to the back to the court. If you're going to work decision making, and you've got to do it on the court. You got to link what you see when you play to what you have to decide when you play to what you have to do when you play. It's got to be in the context. And, you know, the speed of the game is so fast. The connections that the brain has to create between basketball-specific visual information and the actions associated with that are so fast, so dynamic, so complicated. You got to practice that on the court. We got smarter drills. You heard us say that. We got to build smarter drills. We got to build decision-making drills and break things down. you were talking about the bigs up there, you know, half the court is behind them. They're not, it's not even in their field of vision. And yet they have to be aware. There's reason we have terms like guy's got eyes in the back of his head. And so you've either taken a quick look to see where everyone's positioned and moving, and then you receive the ball and you're turning. As you're turning, you've got shifts and defenders. You've got your offensive teammates. That's where this Draymond Green and Clay and Steph connection becomes important, because you do learn about the speed and the movement characteristics of your teammates. You learn about their tendencies. And the more you learn about that, it helps the decision-making process out. But as that big is turning, all this stuff is happening less than a second. I mean, it is that fast. And so that's why when you measure decision-making in athletes, you can't use intellectual-based assessments. You can't use the stuff we use for concussion testing, just measuring everyday sorts of thinking skills. You have to get into what we call speeded cognition. It is the systems these athletes are using to make these rapid decisions you're talking about, Coach, it's at the extreme of human performance. For a nerd like me who studies the brain, it is unbelievable what these athletes are doing on the court from a brain standpoint.
Yeah, it's next level. I mean, I've been blessed to play in SEC, coach in SEC, you know, be in the Bucks organization and see some guys, as we mentioned, Giannis, one of the best, on one hand, right? The ability to have all of the intangibles, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to not only lock in and watch film and get better, but to process the information in real time. It is so far off the charts. Like I said, this data is another layer on top of where the game is going. The game is going on you got to do everything. Like, you have to be able, even if you're a specialist as a shooter. I mean, think about the shooters they surround around Giannis or the shooters they surround around Luka, right? These are the elite of the elite who process. Those shooters even have to understand awareness, spacing. They have to have learning capacity, because the superstar may veer off and do some crazy, out of control move, spin, and then throw it across his head. You better be in the spot, in the corner, and ready to process and knock it down with confidence, with this is what I'm here to do, without the distraction of the other team's bench screaming in your ear right next to you, right? Like, the distraction piece, like, it all fits together for everyone's role. And it is such at a high level. Again, coaches are looking with analytics, with different ways. How do I make sure I'm prepared? My players are prepared. How can I coach them better for that moment? Because we want to be the elite of the elite. Yeah. And that's where this has been such a mind-blowing thing, because it adds a layer to all the things that we're already doing, right? It's not replacing anything. It is adding to we're already doing. And I know coaches love to hear you say, let's do it on the court, right? So we're doing some analytical type stuff, and you're telling me I got to do it on the court? Yeah. That is awesome. You're not taking away from me as a coach.
No. Now, I immediately went to a story. How many times, Coach O, have you seen LeBron make some unbelievable move and then he passes it? And it's J.R. Smith one step off of where LeBron thinks he is. And then you see LeBron point to him like, hey, you were supposed to be here.
Yeah,
because he's understanding it at such a high level that the guys around him, hey, man, like it's time to. And so the announcer, he might pick up on it, but the average fan is like, what a terrible pass. Like he was wide open. How did he not see it? But in LeBron's head, he's like, hey man, based on what we were reading, this is actually where you were. He knows where the other guy, it's like Peyton Manning. They know where everybody's supposed to be.
And that's part of the predictability of being unpredictable, right? So you incorporate drills. And again, I go back to Giannis, just learning. I mean, I just learned so much of unpredictability is predictable. So I know when he's going a full head of steam, he's going there, he's going to make something happen.
Get ready.
I got to get myself in a place, again, regardless of distraction, regardless of what we're processing, regardless of all the other things, I have to process the information to get where I need to be, because this is instinctive learning. The coach said this team doesn't really help on corner threes well. So I got to get to the corner. I got to get shot prep. So there's just these layers that all work together with the unpredictability of players. And, you know, that's part of, you know, improvising, right? That's something that you test is just improv, you know, who can improvise well and make right reads through just improv, right? So all those layers for me, again, I was a math major, right? So I can geek out, you know, I can kind of nerd with the numbers as well. And I just think, man, as a coach, any layer I can get to help my guys with things that you would normally say, hey, he's just random. Well, it's not really random.
Right.
You know, there's some predictability to how people process information and what they may or may not do. And if you can get ahead of it, which is what this talks about, I want to get the information ahead of time. We want to practice it. We want to rep it. We want to put our guys in situations. So when it happens in real time like that, guys are able to adapt and have success.
Automation. Coach, real quick, before we move into the last segment, how many players at the high school level? I know we spent a lot of time talking about college pro. How many players at the high school level? I know everyone wants to work on their bag, and I get it. How many players are working on decision-making drills at that high school level? Because the irony is that's where you can move the needle the most, is in that early stages of brain development. How many players at the high school level do you know? I know you've recruited a lot. How many are working on it?
Not a ton, but, you know, I think just everything's getting better, right? Everything's trickling down. You got prep schools, you got, you know, the circuits that players play on, and kids are coming in the college one and done, or they can go straight to college, or they can go to the G Young. You know, there's these schools they can go to where they don't have to finish college, and now they're getting better coaches. And so I think it's trickling down where they are starting to work on it a little bit better, because they want to be elite, right? They want to be great. And even the high school kids are watching film more. They're versus just the highlight tape kids score
on
50,
YouTube
actually watching on YouTube. And so I do feel, you know, as a coach, coaches are wanting to be elite. You know, coaches are connecting to college coaches, to pro coaches. They're trying to get an advantage. And we're seeing more and more elite programs at the high school level that are actually, you know, producing some high level players that play and produce away, right? And in college and are straight to the pro. So I do feel it is starting to get to that place because of how many of us olders are saying, man, you guys aren't working on your game. I think these young guys are tired of hearing that a little bit. So I do feel it's getting better. And I think part of this is the data, right? If you're able to get a little bit of that data earlier, it helps the high school kid work on some of the things they need to. It helps the college coach recruit better, understand players that may not score 30 in an AAU game, right? But this kid is, man, he's off the charts in how he makes decisions. And if he's around our players and we have better pieces around him, he will thrive. And then obviously it helps, you know, for the professional level, the more data you can get on younger kids, younger players. You know, I just think how many young guys we had in the G League, how many young players are in the NBA. There's a lot of young guys that you want to get to know more about their ability to play, but also to process information because it gets them to where they need to be faster.
Do you have anything to promote? Go ahead if you want to before we move into our last segment here.
No, other than S2 is great.
No, I know you do like foundation work. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that at all or anything like that.
No, I mean, I obviously, you know, I love coaching. I know, you know, one thing that I've been a part of, whether it's Circle Legacy or something, just discipleship with coaches yeah. being to come together and pray and stay connected, but also just, you know, being connected with Athletes in Action and different organizations that have been really instrumental in coaches. Nation of Coaches is another one. So, you know, for this, I'm excited to work with you guys. We met when we were at Bandied and Trevecca and
long time coach
all on the journey. So it's been pretty cool to see all this come to fruition. So yeah, I appreciate the spot.
Oh, no doubt. Okay. All right. Three questions. Could be random, could be funny, could be both, could be neither. Can you give me your best Giannis story? I know you brought him up a ton, and now I just can't help myself.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks organization, we keep everything tight in the vest. So
yeah, I hear you.
I won't leak anything that's not on TV. So I'll give you one is obviously I think people saw where he literally is a family affair. I mean, if you haven't seen his story on Disney Plus, it is phenomenal.
The book, book is awesome too. There's a book.
It's awesome.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. So what you hear about him is real. Family guy, family's always there. Obviously, his brothers are in the organization. They're all family. Their story of their older brother and how he was kind of the leader and helped them. So he is generous at heart. But he literally walks around with a, U-Haul kind of dolly, giving everyone who works in the building, everyone, equipment staff, it doesn't matter who you are, athletic trainer, doctor who comes in once a week, a pair of his brand new shoes. He gets their sizes. He doesn't tell anybody. I mean, it could be women's size 4, right? He has it and he personally delivers and says, hey, thank you all you do. And gives everybody a pair of shoes. And it trickled down even to the G League where we got a pair of Giannis's. And that part of who he is real.
Oh, that's so cool.
There is some film of one-on-one battles and training camp and stuff. So if they leaked any of those one-on-one, but there's some things where he can play one-on-one against anybody. It could be a guard or a big. He ain't losing. That his competitive edge. You can back off of him to shoot threes. He gonna make a three to win the one-on-one game and then point at you. And then you come back and be the same smile and competitive. But his competitive edge, which everyone knows, so this is not a secret information from the Bucks, but his competitive edge and his body fat, just like I've never seen anything like it before in my life. And so that is a very soft answer. To not get in trouble. So the shoe story will be this story. So I don't get in trouble with any secret archive files. Man. But that's the story I would say is some of these stars you would think they just talk it or they do it for cameras. I mean, legitly, I mean, people are getting shoe size. Hey, what's your shoe size? I'm like, why are they asking people shoe sizes? And he had a master plan and it was pretty cool.
That's amazing. We are blessed and fortunate to be able to watch him play, and I'm excited to see what they do this year under Doc. Can you detail the best recruiting story that you have, whether you are a part of it, whether you were getting recruited, just the best recruiting story that you can share, as I've known that we have to ask that.
Yeah, we won't get it. You know, with NIL, everything's legal now. When I was getting recruited, nothing was legal. So, I was recruited heavily by the SEC, so I have some crazy stories of me being recruited. But for this pod, I'll probably go to two guys under the Scott Pera era at Rice. We were there, a great coach, and we needed a shooting guard. And so we each assistant had a guard that they really liked. And one of the guys he sent us to see, one was a kid from Chicago who I really liked, a kid named Drew Peterson. And he was a Swiss Army knife, and he played the 4 and the 5 in the AAU tournament. And he made 0 threes. He was like 0 for 11, but we're looking for a shooting guard. But he made every right play, every right read. I think he had 10 assists, 10 rebounds. And he just was like high IQ. And I was like, coach does not got to take this kid. He made 0. He's a shooter. We're shooting guard. He's 0 for 11. And then we saw a skinny kid from North Carolina who shot threes from anywhere except for on the line or inside the two, like inside the 3-point. And there was a kid named Trey Murphy III.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
So they send me to this AAU game and it's in Lake Point in Atlanta. And one of our assistants, Chris Crider, he's at Rice now, great guy. He's like, hey, oh, got to watch this kid, Trey. And he's like a toothpick. And he, I watched 3 games. He shot 0 twos. I mean, like a layup, head fake, just bring it out. He played for his dad. His dad is awesome. But he was one of the – I mean, he had 8 threes in the game. Then I think the head coach saw him. He had like 9. I said, it's done. And he didn't have that many offers, especially D1 at our level. But seeing a skinny kid who was just like straight up potential, and obviously now he's in the
NBA. Did you sign Trey Murphy?
One of the best players. So was Trey Murphy signed with Rice? I didn't sign him. Our staff got Pira. Rice, yeah. So when we were Rice, we signed him. So it's part of we're on the staff. So Trey Murphy signed to Rice. Drew Peterson signed to Rice. That was our first recruiting class that year with Scott Pierre.
Yeah, pretty good.
You know, Trey had a great, great freshman, sophomore year, transferred to UVA, ended up going to the NBA. Drew Peterson, same thing. Great freshman, sophomore year, you know, transferring to USC, is in the NBA. And so how about this? Drew Peterson's got a world championship this year. Love him. Yep. Great family. With the Boston Celtics as a two-way player, and then Trey Murphy with the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. Man, he's doing his thing.
Just remember Scott Perry and our staff at Rice say, hey, we need a shooter. Here's a couple of guys, and those are two of the guys that we looked at and ended up committing and signing to Rice. And again, that staff we had was phenomenal, and I never take credit for a recruit. We all got it done. And to see those guys thrive from – yeah. You know, the unrecruited skinny kid and Trey to the high IQ, you know, kid from Chicago and Drew Peterson and how things kind of work out is pretty cool.
That is amazing. And last question, what are you most excited about now as you're in your new role as chief of staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the game is going, if you think about the pro game and the college game, you know, with NIL, a transfer portal, there's a lot of roles like a GM or a chief of staff or the operational side. So if you're in the pro game, you have the front office and then you have the coaching side. Front office really has to help with all the behind the scenes of an organization. But now it's become even more complex with NIL and with players and roster construction, roster management. It's different. It's a different game. It's just not, hey, recruiting a kid, bring him on campus. There's a lot of complexities to that. And so, you know, there's so many mentors, Bryce Drew being a great mentor, done a great, amazing job at Grand Canyon. Talking about three out of the last 4 years in NCAA tournament. Last year, they win their first NCAA tournament game. Mm-hmm. Like, he's crushing it. What they're doing there is special. And just the evolution of how coaching and the profession is going, the experience of being in the G League and understanding roster management, roster construction, meshing guys that may haven't played together, and how do you get the best out of them is really important. And that's something I look forward to and excited about.
Coach, thank you so much. Coach Omar Mantz, Coach O, longtime NBA college coach, 21 seasons last year with the Wisconsin Herd of the Milwaukee Bucks organization. Thank you so much for joining us. That was awesome. Thanks for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. If you like the content we're putting out, please subscribe with that plus sign at the top of your app, leave a review about the episode, and share it with a few friends. You can follow us on Twitter at S2 Cognition and Instagram at S2.Cognition. If you'd like to get in touch with the program or show, please visit our website at S2Cognition.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, signing off for now. We will talk to you soon.